Great. It's official. It's also officially spring. So that's fantastic news. Hopefully you're enjoying some of the nicer weather we're getting, and it's only going to get better. So that's positive progress. Let me just share my screen here. Going to spend a little bit of time today talking about applications of coding for younger learners, and give you a chance to look at some of the tools that have been used in classroom settings K-8. And I also want to talk a little bit about something extremely boring, but sometimes really useful, technology integration models, ways to think about how you might bring technology into your practice as a teacher. And I'm not going to spend too much time on that because some people find it very unuseful, but I know some people also just like the visualness of having a model to think through design for integrating technology. So I'll just share a little bit of a teaser, and I'll give you a resource that you can access if you want to dig deeper into that. Just first, some updates. We have the EdCamp coming up quick, thanks to all those that completed the doodle. So I got a sense of what time is going to work best. Inevitably, the time we pick, which is available to most, won't be available to all. I do apologize for that. If you're able to finagle your schedule, we appreciate it. It's a great experience. I'll tell you more about it later today as well. And if we really had to, we could run a second one. The problem is that you need numbers to make this work. And so if we ran a second one and we divided the class, two sections of the class, if we didn't have enough people, it just wouldn't have the same vibrancy. So we're trying to get as many people in there as possible. I will not hold the class next Tuesday, but I will be here. So if you have questions or you want to just do a kind of a free-flowing session on ideas you have or things you want to talk about, I can be available for the 10:30 slot next Tuesday, but I won't hold an official class. The official class will move to Wednesday. And right now we're looking at a 12:30 start. So we're looking at an hour. We're going to bring as many of you as possible together. I will give you a new Zoom link for that because we're going to share it with the other group. And you're going to meet the other section. I don't know how much cross-pollination you've got with that section, but I think it's another K-8 group. And so it'll be nice to just have the wisdom of the crowd, as it were. And we will also invite people in our social networks, teachers, principals, people from the district who might want to come in. It's not certain that they will, but last time we did this, we had a few practicing teachers, other teacher candidates. We had some from UNBC join us. So watch that space. Either way, it's going to be just a great chance to tackle some issues you're most interested in, not even within the bounds of technology. So it could be something you're interested in outside of that, just related to teaching and learning. I'll show some examples of that later today too. Any questions about that? I will talk more about the format and what to expect later today.
And if we can't make it, you might have said this before, will it be recorded?
Yeah, the challenge with recordings is we're going to be breaking out. That's the whole point of the conference, is to get into these breakout rooms. And it won't record all of those conversations. It only records the main room. So right, the recording wouldn't be much use, I don't think.
Okay, because I'm just supposed to work at that time, so I was just wondering.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay.
Like I said, we tried to get as many as possible.
So it's okay. I understand. I understand. It's okay.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do about collecting some artifacts from that might be made available after. And I'll be sharing a lot of, you know, the whole point we do the EdCamp is for you to think about, well, how can I use this model in my classroom? Or how could I use this for a professional development event or some other type of collaboration with teachers? So you'll have all the resources made available so that you could do that if you wanted to. And there's a good chance you'll encounter this model again as a teacher in PD day kind of events. Right. So that'll take us to end of March next week. And then we have one last class where I'm going to introduce some concepts around gaming, gamification of learning. And that will be our final class. We'll do a little bit of a wrap-up activity. Amazing. But yeah, we're nearly there. So congrats on holding on for the journey. And yeah, till then, reach out if you have questions. The meetings that I've opened up are for us to chat about the term and give you a chance to showcase things you want about your portfolio, things that you want to feedback on about the course. And that'll be 10 minutes. That is a requirement for the course completion. And I've got a whole bunch of meetings already lined up. So if you haven't booked that, start thinking about it soon. Any questions about those final meetings?
When do those need to be booked?
They should be finished by that last week of the course. I think I've got availability till Thursday. This should be April and it should be 6. Is that right? Sorry about that. Yeah. So I think I've got availability till about the 8th. So you can book those through the link I've put out on Mattermost. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, reach out to me so that I can bring you up to speed. Cool. So till then,
sorry. Go ahead. Oh my gosh.
My phone. Oh my.
So when are we supposed to do our, when are we expected to do our presentation thing?
So your presentation is within your pod. And I was just about to talk about that. You'll be doing that before, I would imagine, before that last week of the class as well. So you can book those flexible to where your pod is available to meet and the timings you're available to meet. And you can conduct that presentation within that group. You can also record it if you want. And you definitely will be creating an artifact to leave behind and share it on your portfolio. And I'm very happy to be invited to those. I can't always make it, but I would love to be able to participate in those as well. So I have had an invitation to one group so far, and I'm able to make that. So keep that in mind. I'm very happy to. And it doesn't add pressure. I just want to be there to listen to what you've discovered through your inquiry. So get that done. If you're ready to go, you can get it done this week. If you need a little more time, before the next, before the end of the class on the 6th, that's the week of the week of the 6th. As long as you get it done within that, I think you'd be fine. Any other questions? Okay. Just a quick shout out to the artificial intelligence workshop, folks. That was really interesting. I know not everybody was able to get to that, but it was great to see that initiative. A few of our group was there and a few from the other section, I would presume. So congrats to those that ran that, I think successfully. And I really enjoyed the conversation with folks in that session. Do the organizers want to say anything about that? Lara, I know, at least is partially organizing it. Anyone?
Sure. I can just say, like, thanks to everybody who came. It was a really good event, and I found some really useful, like, resources from it. So I'm hoping you did as well. We did get approved for co-curricular credit. So if you need any help with that, I can, like, send you the link. I think it's just on the co-op portal, though, under the menu, and then you just have to select what you learned. So... you can take advantage of that if you would like to. But yeah, just thanks for coming.
Great. Thanks, Lara. Yeah. I love those opportunities. And it's something we don't go into a great deal of depth in this course, at least not now, just because it's kind of a emerging kind of idea in the context of education. But it's an important one in the context of our lives, I think, that we're all kind of experiencing aspects of artificial intelligence. And there's a lot of folks out there who think it's going to change the way education's done. Of course, that's always been the case, from records to television, etc. Those new technologies are always meant to be the game changer, but time will tell. Till now, just take a critical lens when thinking about those in your life. All right, now onto the boring. Maybe you'll find it exciting. I don't know, but I do have a slide deck. I used to give this presentation in the class, but I just didn't find it hit very well. So I'll just give a little teaser of it, something I do want you to take note of. And then you'll have this resource available to you for future access if you're interested. Week X. So there's lots of ways to think about how to integrate technology into teaching and learning, right? Some folks think, I've got the latest technology, we've got to use it in the class because it's part of our world. But I think it's really important to take a deliberate approach to thinking about how technology gets you to the learning goals that you have for your learners. So to start always with that idea of, what am I trying to do here? And how do I get folks to participate, learn, be accessible, capture some things along the way, and provide a really good learning experience? So there's a bunch of these models out here. Here's a couple of them. SAMR model, maybe you've heard of it. TPAC, they've all got these great acronyms, of course, that go with them. And constructive alignment. And in this slide deck, which I'll give you, kind of walks you through all of these. They're pretty simple. And so I'll give you that as a resource for later. But I did want to talk just quickly about the SAMR model. It stands for Substitution, Augmentation, Modification, and Redefinition of Teaching and Learning Activities. So you think about, you could operate your class without using technology at all. That's a little hard to do because even things like pencils might be considered technology for some. But there's that option, of course, to keep it low tech and just do things with your learners in a simple way. You can think about technology as a way of substituting for activities. One common simple example is to think about how students might use computers rather than pad and paper to draft stories, right? So that would be a substitution activity. Not much of a functional change. They're still writing. They're still being creative and just capturing it in a slightly different way. Within a word processor, they can start to use tools like spell check or grammar support. So that would be now a bit more of an augmentation. So you couldn't necessarily do that on pen with a pen and paper. It doesn't provide those affordances. So you can think about an augmentation activity where the technology actually adds something. This actually adds something that's worthwhile. Or you could take a deliberate stance and say, well, I don't want them to have help with grammar, spelling, because the point of this activity is for them to learn how to spell. So you got to kind of wonder, like, what is my intention for this actual learning activity? But if you want them to be creative and draft stories in a quick way, using a computer as a simple thing might be a great way to augment that activity and provide some support along the way. All right. Goes on. Modification. This is when the tool, the technology, significantly changes the design of the task. In the writing example, you may think about how you could get students to write with not only a word processor, but in a way that's online so that you could give quick feedback or have peers review each other's writing, right? So now you're talking about things you definitely couldn't do with pad and paper. It provides more opportunities for peer review, formative feedback, et cetera. And that would be a modification of the existing activity. Finally, redefinition. And in this case, you might think about how you're not actually writing stories with text at all. You're using memes, graphics, or multimedia as a way to craft stories, or you're getting them to write coding projects that result in these stories. So they're actually doing something completely different based on the availability of the technology, that it wouldn't have been possible with the pad and paper. So it's good to be aware of the SAMR model. You'll probably encounter it in other areas. So it's just one way to think about how you might take the idea of using technology and think about how it changes the task, changes the learning outcome, changes potentially what your students might be doing as part of that activity. Like I said, within the deck, there's some videos and things that can help you if you want to go deeper on this, if you find this useful. So I'll leave that to you to investigate, add it to your resource bank, and you can come back to it, okay? Were there any questions on the model or thoughts? Useful or no? Thumbs up if it's useful. Thumbs down if it's not so useful. Or maybe you need a little more time with it. I tend to like visual models. I don't know why, but they seem to help me kind of, I like to have them in my sight just to help me kind of think through different problems. Okay. I'm going to move off of that. I love these pictures. I don't know if you saw these pictures when I flipped through here before, but these are created a long time ago. And this, the artist here was trying to imagine what schools might be like in the year 2000. Ooh, that's 21 years ago, but this was probably created in the 40s or something. This is terrifying on the left here, where they're grinding up the books and they're somehow being transmitted to the learners' heads. I feel bad for this chap who has to do the grinding. And then I think on the right here, this is an early design sketch for Zoom. This is what it was supposed to be like. So, all right. Gonna introduce another resource to you. And now we're changing gears here. We're moving away from the tech integration models. If you haven't heard about this, this website, I do encourage you to add it to your resource bank. Has anyone been to Common Sense Media website? Piper, how do you use it, or what was your experience?
It kind of provides, like, doesn't it provide, I think it usually it gives you like a kind of like a summary of like what kind of media sources and what kind of movies, videos, articles, whatever it may be, whatever you might incorporate, you might encounter media wise, and it kind of like rates it, summarize it and rates it based on like what's appropriate for different age groups and for different students and stuff.
Yeah, that's a great summary. It's a resource that reviews some of the media, but internet resources, apps, movies, as you say, as well. Great resource for parents, as well as for educators. And so there's a section on the website for education that you can go through to look at ratings for different apps that exist out there on the web, or how to talk about digital citizenship from any age. And then they've got Wide Open School, which is sort of resources, like open educational resources for teaching and learning. And what I encourage you to do is, if you come upon an app or something that someone else is using in their class and they say, it's great, this is the best tool, get it installed on your iPads and go. I would just have a look at this resource as a way to see what other teachers are saying about how it's being used and what potentially the issues might be. So I find these EdTech ratings and reviews really useful. So I would actually encourage for your projects where you're, if you're looking at a particular tool or concept, this might be a good website to check if there's a review for that particular thing. So let me see if there's one we could look at. Flipgrid, I'm sure you've heard of that. That's a video tool where people can create responses. So you can look at the actual review for that and see what teachers are saying, what experts are saying, what students are saying about how it can be used. And then there's good sections on how can I teach with this tool? What is it? Is it good for learning? Good questions to be asking before investing time as a teacher into these types of resources. And it's also, as Piper said, available for TV shows, or I don't know if they've gotten to like YouTube channel reviews, because I know a lot of young learners do watch these YouTube channels that aren't necessarily on TV, but they're kind of serialized so that they're episodic. But they probably have some reviews for those as well. And you can tell if you find a learner watching something, you're like, what is this? You might be able to find a bit more information through Common Sense Education. So a good resource to have as part of your toolkit. And in the world of coding and computational literacy, there's tons of apps. We're going to look at a few of them today. So that's why I kind of mentioned Common Sense Education here, because you can use the tool itself to check the validity of the apps that are out there. You're going to find there's just hundreds and thousands of apps specific for teaching and learning. And it's just nice to have that review available if you want to check how worthy it is of your time to invest in looking at it for your class. But there's good reason to think about why coding might be an important thing, an important literacy to start thinking about at young ages. Coding is kind of a fairly kind of new introduction to curriculum, I think, in most classrooms, if at all. But it's not, some of the principles of coding are not that abstract, like the idea of logic, sequencing, pattern recognition. These are things that come in to other types of learning activities. It's just making the deliberate link between this is actually a coding principle for your learners. It can help us understand the world around us. I mean, we're all interacting with digital devices. All of those are coded in a certain way. In the world of AI, as we talked about in the workshop, there's lots of implicit coding that goes into those that can affect the outcome of how they present information to us. So it's good to be aware of. Can be used for problem solving activities, can be used to develop games or animations, which we'll look at a couple today. So it can be fun for some, and there are ways that you can think about bringing it into history lessons, for social sciences, literacy. So I'll give you some resources that kind of give you ideas for bringing coding into those diverse areas as well. Just to be clear, I'm not talking about this. If you're thinking, oh, coding, I don't know if I can get my grade twos involved. It's definitely not this. This is probably coding that you might see at a higher level. I'm talking about things like this, things that are like object oriented and almost like puzzle pieces. This particular example is just taking the logic, adding them to these actual little puzzle pieces, and then learners can put these together and see what happens when they run their program. So when this one is clicked, something will say hello, and then it will stop. So very simple. There's lots of examples of these that we'll get a chance to dig into. And you can get deeper and into, you know, more complex coding applications. I think that's one of the reasons people are starting to consider it for the curriculum, because you can start early and start building on top and thinking about logic, programmatic thinking, sequencing as students get older. And they can carry these projects with them if they're using similar apps. So I mentioned some of these things already. Pattern recognition, abstraction. The School District 61 has a great coding project and a bunch of teachers who are really keen on finding ways to bring this in to their curriculum. And so they may be people to reach out to if this is something you're interested in. They have a great website that has a lot of the resources, and they do PD events and share a lot of practice through those networks. So if you're really interested in that, this local school district has quite a bit as well. The province has an initiative, and they have got a website called CodeBC that links all of the big ideas and the curriculum to potential applications of coding. So again, this is a good resource to dig into if you're trying to find ways to link this to some topic that you didn't think there might be a way to connect it with coding applications. Lots of resources on this website to help with that. So has anybody heard of Scratch? It's a software program, not an itch, but it's developed by MIT, which you might have heard of. They're a big university in the States, and they've got an initiative to try to get young learners engaged with coding without writing actual code. As I said, those puzzle pieces are what allow them to kind of move the abstract notion of coding into sort of a physical, kind of almost like a game for young learners to engage with. Has anybody heard of it? Played with it? I'll show you a quick example. One thing that's great about this project is it's free, and learners can get started without creating accounts, which I always appreciate, because as soon as you start creating accounts, you have to wonder about where that data is being stored. So it's really easy to get students involved with, or just use them as activities for you to talk about principles of coding, or maybe that's a way to introduce them. So they can go to this website, scratch.mit.edu. They can create a project. They can sign in, so they can save those projects if they want. And they can create basic little activities. This one, I always get eaten by that shark. Well, the idea here is essentially I have to get away from this shark, but I'm not very fast, so he always gets me. And so what happens here is, yeah, you can play this game. This is kind of a game you might play on a mobile device or something like that. But as well, they can see inside the game. So I click on that link. I should get the logic that drives this game. So this one maybe is a little bit fairly complex to start with, but it is showing exactly what's happening. So when I press the down arrow, I move 10 steps, and let me actually increase that to 50. And if I click the left arrow, I go 50 steps to the left, and I'll just make these all 50. And if I run it again, now I'm much faster. The shark will never get me. Uh-oh. Okay, I'm pretty good. So that's the idea. Basically, the learner can control the variables as part of the coding project, and then change the game. There's lots of things they can do. They've got characters that they can change. So they could change the color of the scuba person, or turn it into something else if they wish. So lots of ways to start from scratch, as it were, or use these example projects to sort of re-engineer some of the code. I also want to draw your attention as teachers to some of the resources for Scratch, if you did want to try to use this. There's all kinds of projects that you can get started with. And I actually think there's a Scratch education website that's specifically for teachers, for lesson plans, for ideas. And this is in the resources as well that I'll provide to you. So it's great because it just works in the browser. If you've got computers, you can go with it. There's also an addition for younger learners called Scratch Junior, and that's available for the iPad and I think Android. So it's not just an app, iPad, it's iOS and Android. So you probably want to use it on a larger screen, but it could be installed on your phone if you want. And we'll look at that a little closer in a minute. Scratch tutorials, coding cards, which I think are really good because they're kind of printables, reproducibles that you can bring into the class. And it kind of walks them through how to create a little piece of code step by step, and then start to think about how those pieces of logic result in things happening in there. They're basically building a little tiny app. It's kind of neat. A couple of other examples. These are all example projects that you can have a look at. I think it'll be helpful for you actually to spend a little time playing with these. So we're going to get to that in a minute. So Scratch is the first one I'm going to introduce. It's it's widely used by educators can be used to either start new projects and think about logic or take existing projects and re-engineer them to understand how that code gets put together. I mentioned Scratch Junior. So when we get into the activity today, if you have an iPad or an Android tablet and you're willing to install Scratch and you're interested in thinking about Scratch and programming for younger learners, this is designed for like kindergarten to two, then I'll get you to join that group. But it's not available in the browser. Unfortunately, it's only available on those devices. So if you've got one, you can have a look at how it works.
Wait, do you mean Scratch Junior?
Yeah, Scratch Junior.
The only one, okay.
So Scratch Junior will be, you'll need an iPad or an Android ready device to do that. And I would encourage something with not your phone, just because it'll be hard to work with some of those little objects. But if you've got like a kit in your school with iPads, you may find this is already installed. So it's just a matter of digging into the Scratch resources, thinking about a lesson that you might want to bring for your learners or some creative time that they could use this app for. Then you could use it with them. It's going to be up to you to decide when do they move from Scratch Junior to Scratch in the browser. I think the Scratch browser version is pretty stripped down. Like you could start with a really simple project for younger learners if they're ready to interact with the hardware. That's probably the bigger question. And the third one I'm going to have folks look at is another way to think about coding, but not on a computer, rather thinking about it through robotics. So there's a couple of these out there. These are just a couple that I've had experience with, Sphero and Bebot, but there's tons of other ones out there. And what these allow learners to do is, in a similar way, design logic and sequencing that drives a robot around the physical environment. So they can program these in advance and then run them through a maze or have them engage with some sort of activity together. Tell us about Microduino, Piper.
I was actually asking you about it because I also noticed that it's like a pretty big thing, like robot, like a programming coding thing for kids, and you can buy kits, and it's like to promote like STEM. Mm-hmm. In kids. I'm on their website right now. It's actually really cool. I think it's something that like a lot of schools are starting to buy these STEM kits. Mm-hmm. But so it's not like a free resources because it is a robotics kind of, you need like the electronic hardware platform in order to do it, but it's like really cool. And they can make their own like movable, it's really interesting. So I would just like, I can put it in the chat.
Yeah, do share it in the chat. Like there's tons of these out there now. They're really emerging as sort of a classroom activity hardware kit. And so I'll add MicroDuino to the list for next time. The reason I mentioned Sphero at least is Yuvik has Sphero robots. So if this was something you were really interested in, you could actually get those and kind of experiment with them. And there may be a potential to bring them into the classroom setting if you made an arrangement for that. And you may find your school already has invested in these. Hopefully, if they have, they're not just in a classroom. They're available to all classrooms. So you have to determine within the school how you can get access to some of these. But it's a good point. They're not free. You need to think about how learners are going to share these. Specifically in a time of COVID, not likely very well. But I'm talking perhaps more outside of that period where they can pass these around and kind of engage with them in a normal way. Madeline, so Madeline's had some experience with Sphero. Do you want to tell us more, Madeline? Love to hear.
Yeah, the library had them at the school I was at, and they had my class that I was in the other grade 5 class had battles. Like they made a little ring and they had used like just solo cups to make their little robots. And then they put them on top of the little Sphero thing and they were battling each other. It was entertaining. The whole library was full of them watching each other battle.
So were they programmed in advance or was there someone kind of controlling the movement in real time?
Well, the kids were controlling the movement with the tablets. Like they kind of like, I don't know, it's not really programming, but they kind of just center them before they start using them so they know how to move it. And then they were using their iPads to move the bots around and try and knock the cup off the other people's bots.
And what was the atmosphere like? Was it, how were the kids reacting?
They just thought it was fun. Yeah. The robots and battle each other.
I really wish I had toys like this when I was a kid. I had to like imagine them, but no, they're fun. They're kind of engaging, and there's elements of gamification in here. You want to win, and there's elements hopefully of learning some of the logic too behind how these things are controlled. That's great that you're seeing that in the schools. Thanks for sharing. Anyone else have experience with these types of hardware tools? Okay. I'll move on. Here's another website you can check out, code.org, and it's got tons of similar to Scratch coding projects, but they're not just in that one environment. They're in a whole bunch of different environments. So there's a bit more of a diverse chance to experience diverse kinds of environments for using code. And this, it's nice because again, the teacher resources are great for these. So, you know, you can look at elementary school projects and then you can, I think you can find things by grade, of course. I think you can also find them by topic or subject area. I'm sure there's a way of that. Let me see if I can find it. The fundamentals, yeah. So they're building up to high school. Let's see if I can find it here. Beautiful. I'll find the actual link where you can search by topic. It's just nice to have those. Like, can I search for an activity I can do within an hour? That's sometimes useful for a teacher. And some of these resources, a lot of the open ed resources do have searches based on the subject you're trying to teach or the concept, but also how much time will it take and what kinds of tools and hardware I might need to actually get it done. So another great resource, and I'll give you a chance to dig into these in a minute. These all require some sort of hardware. In the three cases, Scratch Junior, code.org, you'd have to have computers for learners to work with. With the Sphero or BeBot example, you need to also have these robots available. If you don't have any of those things, you could look at Computer Science Unplugged. And this is a fantastic resource. I can't stress enough for thinking about how to do like activities where students are moving around in the classroom that are demonstrating computational or sequencing or different types of logic. And so this is a great resource if you like the idea of coding, but you don't want to put your learners in front of computers. You want to get them moving. Lots of good resources here for educators. And I think if I can find one, so I'll go with searching algorithms, ages 5 to 10. Where is my hat? In some of these, they actually have videos of the classroom activities, which are super useful because you actually get to see how teachers are interacting with them in some of their classrooms. I wish I could remember which one had it. Some of them have photos, but these are all activities that you can run with students. And I'm very sorry, I can't find the one that has the videos because they are super cool. It's really rare to see videos of teachers and learners in a class doing a real activity. If you can find those videos, they're super, especially if the teaching is done really well, they're great to have as resources for your own teaching, to see how other people are approaching topics. So I'll give you a chance to look at this in a couple minutes as well. And all of these do not require computers. They may require some string or some paper and markers, but they don't necessarily require learners to be on their computers. And then the last one I want to mention is the Hour of Code. And this one kind of keeps coding activities to an hour, which is nice if you just want to introduce it slowly with your learners. And I know this one for sure has search by topic. And so what classroom technology do they have available? What topic, what activity type, how long, which I think is really useful to have as a teacher, so you know kind of the parameters of what you're trying to do. I'll do a math and say we have computers and 1 hour only. And then you kind of restrict it to what's possible. You can see these are vastly different. They're not all in the sort of Scratch platform. They're in a bunch of different platforms and they have resources for teachers to run activities based on some of these. So like I said, the best way to kind of get a feel for this is to spend a little time exploring. What I'm going to do, and this is different, and hopefully you got my message the other day about updating your Zoom platform, because I'm going to create breakout rooms, but I'm not going to push you into those rooms. I'm going to create the rooms based on these 5 different applications for coding, and you can join whichever one you want. You can also move if you decide, I've seen enough of this, and have a look at one of the other rooms. So give me a minute to set this up, and questions are good now if you've got them. And I've got a document, of course. I'll get that to you right now. Some things to do when you get to these resources, some things to look for, maybe some things to capture. And I will stop my share. You've got the link to the document. So I'm going to go ahead and create breakout rooms. Like I said, you will be able to join the room. I'll name them with the names of the coding applications we've kind of had a quick overview of, give you a chance to engage a little bit more with those in those rooms. And like I said, you can move as you wish, if you decide you want to. Is that all clear? If you have trouble selecting a room, just reach out to me and I will help. So I'm just creating the rooms right now. So there's going to be Looks like 6 rooms. And I have just opened them. So you should be getting a prompt to join when you're interested in. I see some people are joining, so it's working. If you have any trouble, I am here. All right, welcome back, everyone. Sorry to cut you off. I know if this is something you're interested in, you probably could have spent another hour with that. Anyone looking?
Muted.
Am I muted? No.
Sorry, never mind. I am.
Okay, thanks. I'd love to hear a little bit of feedback from the groups. Perhaps we'll start with Scratch. What did you find? What did you notice?
I'm still a little confused on how to make it work.
Yeah.
Learning curve. I wanted to do Scratch Junior, but the app isn't on phones. It's only on iPads and tablets.
Okay. So if you haven't been in that environment before, you're gonna need a little time to get kind of oriented. So it might be some chance after class if you want to follow that to spend with the app, or rather the Scratch browser-based one, which is easily accessible. Or have a look at some of the teaching resources, how others might have been using it. Any other thoughts on Scratch? I guess, you know, the one thing, I just can't stress how valuable it is to have an app like that you don't have to log into. You can get people working and creating pretty quickly. And that seems like a trivial thing, but it helps a lot if you want to get off the ground.
Michael, how do you get rid of the cat on Scratch Junior?
Piper, get in touch with me. We'll talk about that. The cat, we can get rid of the cat, don't worry.
The cat will not go. And yeah, it's making all kinds of noises. Okay. Ah, it's all good. Continue with class. I will figure this out.
Now, I think Piper was in the Scratch Junior class. Do we have any other thoughts on Scratch Junior?
I was. And somehow I cannot navigate Scratch Junior, which is meant for like grade one children.
Keep at it. I'm sure. Go ahead.
Don't feel bad. I started with Scratch Junior, downloaded it on my iPad, managed to change the color of the cat, then gave up because it didn't do anything. So I have now deleted the app. Very therapeutic.
Deleted the app? You know, come on, you might want to check it out again.
I'm trying. I just want to get rid of the cat. But that's okay. I'll figure him out. I'll figure out how to get rid of the cat. I'll let you guys know when I find out how to get rid of the cat.
Yeah, give us a progress update. Great reflection for your weekly post. And you can capture some of the artifacts from these environments as part of your reflections too, if you want to. Scratches can actually be embedded in a web page if you wanted to go that far. I know Bjorn had a really cool sporting coding project that he might want to share. Programmable robotics was a small group. Is there any findings there folks want to share?
I personally like this one because it's like a physical aspect to technology. So kids are obviously engaged. It's like I've played with the Sphero as well. I just realized that science venture, and it's cool. It's like a little sphere. You can make it do things, and it's like interesting. And I feel like it's like immediate. Obviously works right away, and like you could see the way it moves, and it's interesting. And the same with BeeBots as well. They're just like all those different kinds of bots in there, but yeah, they're all pretty similar.
Thanks, Anna. And Anna had some experience with science ventures, and for folks out there, if you haven't heard of it, it's something definitely to check out at UVic. Anna, do you want to say anything more about science ventures and what they do?
Yeah, it's I love the program because I work with summer camps, and it's like a free program for summer camps that you can apply and like take your kids, and they pretty much for like an hour, there's like all sorts of different ones. And we did a coding one actually with, I don't know if it was Scratch that it was called, but we did it with, it was like on an iPad, and there's like kind of like building blocks, and you make like your own level of a video game, and it's kind of similar to Mario. And so you like jump on blocks and like collect coins, and they make their own level, and then they go through the level. So it is Scratch. Yeah, okay, so I was right. It's super interesting. And they do, like, we did a biology one as well, and like a chem one. So there's so many different aspects of science that they put into it.
Thanks for sharing. Computer Science Unplugged, similar to what Anna was describing, not in front of a computer, getting people moving in the physical world. Any thoughts on that one? I'm surprised it wasn't more, there wasn't more interest there. Usually there is.
I really like it. We looked into image representation. There's lots of different activities. We looked into image representation, and it's pretty cool that all computer images are represented by numbers, just zeros and ones. And then they had some activities for different grades, like color by number, where kids can explore how this works. Yeah.
One thing I did notice about it, though, is like there's lots of different topics, but so many of them, when you click on them, there's prerequisite lessons required. So there's kind of like, if you wanted to do a lesson, you'd have to set it up for the students beforehand with a previous lesson.
Yeah. I think that's actually an advantage to have that explicitly stated. So you know, if you want to get to this, there's a couple things you'll have to do first. And you may have done them in different ways outside of Computer Science Unplugged. The foundations might be there already, but just to be aware of. I don't think there was a code.org group, but Hour of Code. Any thoughts on that one?
I found that really fun. I wanted to take the approach of actually seeing how the kids would progress through one of the games. So I went with the Flappy game because I was quite addicted to that in high school. I couldn't get past level 8, but it was a really interesting experience where I was able to actually use the blocks and see exactly what those blocks transitioned to in the game. So that was really interesting. I definitely wanted to play with it a bit more.
Yeah, and I think that's really the power of some of these coding applications. Kids are playing with games on their phone or on computers, but the chance to look behind and see the logic, however complicated it might be or however simple it might be, they can't do that when they're playing a game. But with these types of applications, that black box of how does this thing work inside, you can peel back and have a look at that layer, which is quite nice. All right. I see a couple chats here. I haven't been catching up. Oh, yeah. Okay, that's good. So, folks, lots here, lots in the slide deck you can chase up if you want to go deeper with any of these. I'll make the document available. There were some notes captured there. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to invite you on a short break. And then when we come back, we're just going to orient for the EdCamp. So I'll give you a sense of what's coming in that and how to design one, give you some resources on how to design one if you wanted to do that. We'll take about 5 minutes. I'll still get you out before noon, so don't worry about that. If you're so inclined, you can come back with a fabulous hat. This is for the spring season, but no pressure to do that. And we'll see you in 5 minutes. All right. Every hat tells a story. Does anyone care to share theirs?
I'd love to share mine. So I recently had a huge problem where I couldn't wear a hat with my ponytail or bun because it was driving me insane and my hair would always look horrid afterwards. So I knitted my own and it has a little hole in the top for my bun and ponytail. So problem solved.
Very good. Very good indeed.
I'm wearing a Greek sailor's cap, which is the second Greek sailor's cap that I've owned. The first one was purchased in Quebec on a mom and son trip to celebrate my graduation from college. And that was a very cherished hat that I wore to almost breaking point and decided to put it away safely and bought a replicant so I can continue to wear it because I love this hat and this style of hat really suits me.
Very Right on.
I got my hat in Mexico because I think so I burn really easily because I'm very pale. And I think I put sunscreen on, but it just wasn't working. Like I could feel myself burning and my shoulders burning. And so we were like, okay, let's stop at the nearest hat stand and just find a huge hat. And so we got this one. And it's very big. It covers like my shoulders.
Good coverage. Yeah. Sarah, I have to ask, what is that on your head?
This is kind of like an Elvis-inspired hat. Great. Kind of reminds me a bit of your hair too, Michael.
Oh, what an honor.
Yeah. No, we used it in a drama project last term as well. Molly was...
impersonated Steve Harvey.
Yeah.
Right on. Good. Well, thanks for those that have played. A last chance, if you wanted to share a hat story. I'm leaving my hat on. I mean, it's up to you, but any other hat stories coming through? Nope. Abigail, thanks for sharing. Abigail shared a link in the chat. Looks like a video on how to run an hour of code on YouTube. So if you're interested in that, I can actually add that to the list of resources as well. So thanks, Abigail. Right. I won't take too much more of your time, folks. Just want to get you oriented for EdCamp. And even if you're not going to be able to make it, this will still be, I think, interesting. So you know what these are and how to consider them for your own learning design practice. Let's see here. Oh, EdCamp. This is just a different type of way to organize a group of people together to have a bit of a conference. I don't know if you have ever been to a conference before. Often you go and there's some sort of topic that's been decided upon in advance, or there's a series of sessions that you can go to that have been defined again in advance. A lot of the professional development days and activities will follow this approach where it's kind of set out for you. And some people just load these. They're like, oh gosh, I just, you know, this is not of interest to me. It's not applicable to me. So what's happened is this EdCamp model has emerged. It was designed by teachers. It's designed for teachers when they have a chance to come together to brainstorm some topics to talk about, to vote on those topics, to decide what's of most interest to most people there, and then run sessions on those. There's no leader of the session. It's just a chance to have a conversation about that topic that's of interest to the group. So they're free-formed, they're user-generated, and they're often more vibrant than would be one that was designed by an administrator for teachers to engage in. So we're going to have a chance to run one of these together, and you are going to have the chance to define the topics. We're going to do that in a minute. We'll do you usually do this when you're doing the EdCamp, but we're going to do it in advance so that we can combine the list with the other class. And then there'll be a chance to vote on these topics before we meet next week. So that'll all come asynchronously after today, but we'll generate the ideas today and you get a chance to see how this works. If you're doing it in face-to-face, you would get everybody in one room, you generate the topics, people would vote in the room, and then they would break off and discuss those topics. We're doing it on a virtual platform, which is kind of new, but it works. And I don't know if you noticed, if you had a chance to move when you were in the breakout rooms 10 minutes ago, that's what we're going to be using during the EdCamp. So if you're in a session on next Wednesday and you're like, okay, I want to move on, I want to learn something different, you can move to another breakout room. So I know a couple of you moved during that session. It's just a different type of breakout room. Rather than getting stuck with that group, you can move around as you wish. You got autonomy in that way. We'll give you some instructions on how to do that. It's pretty clear, I think, but we'll be there to support during the EdCamp. So yeah, there's some resources in here you can access on your own time. This is a fantastic video that just in 2 minutes shows what this is and what it's about and what the philosophy is. So I encourage you to watch this before the session. And these are some of the topics that have been generated in prior years. So you can see they're not delimited to educational technology. If you want to talk about other issues, they can be raised and they can be part of the brainstorm. So this is definitely not only about tech topics for this EdCamp. We're going to make it available and accessible for all topics that might come to mind. So you can see there's quite a diverse range here, from those specifically talking about literacy to community engaged learning, gaming. You know, tech topics can come up, place-based learning, indigenization often comes up, cell phone use, esports. So it's pretty wild, it runs the gamut of topics. So the idea is now that you maybe are going to have a couple ideas of topics that you'd want to discuss, you'd want to give a little more airtime to. Perhaps it's things that aren't in the program that you're like, I really want to talk about this with some other future teachers, or I want to just get some ideas off my chest about teaching and learning or things that I'm seeing. This is your chance. So I'll give you this document and you can create as many topics as you want. So you're not limited to just doing one by any means. I'll give you the document now. And so what you can do is you can use that document to just capture some of those ideas. If you see overlap, don't worry. We're going to sort those out when we amalgamate the lists of the two classes together. So just get a bunch of ideas down in that document around things you might want to discuss during the EdCamp. Great. And you're all anonymous, so you don't have to worry about if you have a sensitive topic. Everybody in the doc is anonymous unless you want to put your name there. That's up to you. Plus ones are good too. We will get a chance to vote officially where you'll be able to select those topics again in the next couple of days. Great, some amazing ideas emerging. So they can be broad or they can be specific, and they can get more specific when you get into the discussion. So that's quite all right too. So I'm going to leave this document open for edit till probably the end of today. So if something comes to you later, you can add it to the document. Maybe just keep the tab open or keep a copy of that editable document that you can come back to. And then what we're going to do is give you a survey with all these topics, and you'll be able to vote on three. And the ones that get the most interest will become part of the program for next Wednesday. But it doesn't always work out that you get your topic, but it follows the most diplomatic, I guess, or democratic way to get people voting and selecting the topics of most interest. All right, so as always, I'm going to stick around, but officially the class has ended, and I wish you the best for the week. Don't forget about next week. I'll be reminding you, of course. Reach out to me anytime. Please invite me to your presentations. I will come if I can. And if you want to hang around and chat, I will be here. So have a great week, everyone.